All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Vindicta. We have on with us a special guest who's going to give us some insight as to why there may be better places to live around the world than America. If you're not familiar with the current politics, Owen Schroyer of InfoWars is about to be imprisoned potentially for 120 days because of his participation at January 6th, where all he did was speak his mind on a bullhorn. We've seen the government go after their political opponents like President Donald Trump. We've seen them go after Julian Assange. We've seen them go after Edward Snowden and others. And there is no de-escalation within these approaches. And we're very closely growing to an authoritative state like Venezuela, Cuba, Russia, China, you name it. So what better than an option to talk about your other options? And our brother Ben, we met at Jamie Walden's conference just here within about, 2 months ago, Ben. And we had a good conversation, and I decided after hearing Ben's story, I was like, man, you need to tell this story to people because there are people who are looking for a way out of America. They don't know where to go. Most Americans have never traveled outside of America. You and I are both veterans. Ben's a veteran. And we know a little bit about other countries and how those things can treat you. And not everybody is going to be widely accepted everywhere you go. And not everyone's going to have the mental faculties to deal with not getting McDonald's 24/7 either. So, Ben, can you give us an introduction of yourself? Why God moved you out of America, and how are things going for you now in Panama?
All right. Thank you, Doug. Yeah. So, it was a process and kind of an unexpected journey. Of 7 years ago, my wife and I, we sold everything. Most of our stuff. We packed up our five kids and our one dog, and we moved to the country of Panama in Central America. And now we're constructing a Christian community here. And, 20 years ago, 18 years ago, maybe even 12 years ago, I would have never thought I would be here. Like I said, it was a process. I grew up in Texas. I grew up north of Dallas in the 1980s and early 90s. It was Ronald Reagan, G.I. Joe, cartoons, Rocky movies, learning about the Alamo. Texas was the best state and the best country. And I grew up patriotic. My grandfather was in World War II. My grandfather was in the Pacific in the Army Air Corps. My great uncle was in the Army in Europe fighting against the Nazis. My dad then volunteered to join the Navy in Vietnam. And growing up, I just felt it's my duty and honor to serve our country and to be ready to die for our country, shed our blood for our country. And so at 16, in high school, I talked to the Army recruiter and said, I want to serve my country, but, I also want to get an education and I had a dream to be an architect. So the Army recruiter said, we have this Texas Army National Guard you can join. And you can join when you're 17 with your parents' consent. And I was like, all right, let's do it. I took the ASVAB test to see what MOSs I could get into. And the day I turned 17 on a Sunday, Monday morning, I was at the Army, Texas National Guard Armory there in Dallas area, and signing on the dotted line as early as physically possible. And, But that day was it was one of the days I started my journey of kind of waking up to the direction of things in the United States, because I was sitting that morning at the recruiter's desk there, and they ask you a series of questions. The first day you're there, they're asking you your background. They're trying to get, you know, if there's anything that's going to make it where you're not qualified to join the military. And he starts asking these questions about what are my preferences as far as men or women, or, you know, my past with men and women and this kind of thing. But then he stops after a couple of questions and says, "Oh, wait a minute. I can't ask you these questions anymore because, Bill Clinton's don't ask, don't tell. So we're just going to mark through those questions and continue on through the questions." But I could tell he was upset. He didn't like that. You know, he wanted to ask those questions. He didn't want this don't ask, don't tell policy to get started in the military. And I just had in my mind, you know, there's something not right about this. And, later on I joined the Texas Army National Guard. I went to training at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, did 51 Tango, which is technical engineering specialist. Later on, I did 12 Bravo, which is combat engineer. I was assigned to the 111th Engineer Battalion in Abilene, Texas, on the 49th Armored Division, and started serving there. And after a few years, they started doing these sensitivity trainings for the implementation of having women join combat units. And I remember the first day we were in the drill hall, all lined up, and for the first time these women came in, because we were a combat unit, and they were only going to come in like secretarial positions and in the headquarters company. But you could tell the first day they walked in, it just changed the atmosphere. I know there's strong women out there, and there's women that can do things I can't do, but there's a unit cohesiveness when you have all men in a combat situation or in those type of units. And when you bring the women in, it changes that atmosphere. It changes. The people just start acting. You could just tell all the men around you just start acting different. And I this is another thing that just, I'm like, this is not the best move to make us the most strong and capable military in the world. Yeah. And so I could kind of see, it starts looking like a purposeful weakening of the military. And I had considered staying in the military. I did 6 years, and I considered doing OCS, become an officer. And but I just had that. I just didn't really get a good feeling for the direction the military was going. And this is right before 9/11. So I was done with my 6 years. And that's when in January of 2001. So during that time, I was also going to college, and I was going to university at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, and I wanted to be an architect and an engineer. So I got degrees for that. After I finished university and my time in the military, I got married, started having children, was living in the Dallas area, and eventually started my own architecture firm. And I thought I was going to live the rest of my life in Texas. Everything was going smooth. Everything was great. And by this time, 9/11 had happened. But I was believing in the media and the politicians and all that. I mean, I believed the 9/11 narrative. I basically believed all the medical establishment, the media establishment, the education establishment, all these things. I didn't have any doubt about any of that stuff. One day I got contacted by the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And they started talking to me, and I started getting angry. I was like, these people are going to say that the government I was serving and ready to die for was somehow involved with 9/11. And I was just like, nope. I cut them off. Like, no, I'm not hearing this. I'm not going to hear any of that. And and didn't want any part of that. But still, eventually I started, over the years, I started noticing inconsistencies in the stories, in the media, in the politicians, and my worldview started to change. I started listening to Christian talk radio and Christian podcasts. I started listening to Steve Quayle, Hagman and Hagman, Rick Wiles on True News, Russ Dizdar, Chris Pinto, L.A. Marzulli, Chris White, Tom Horn, all those guys. And I didn't hear, this was all new to me. I mean, I don't know if it was for you, but for some people, for me, it's like a shock, you know, it's like an emotional shock that almost everything you believed just starts getting torn down. And, you start questioning everything and all the institutions and you start digging deeper and deeper. You know, we talked about going down that rabbit hole or being Alice in Wonderland, falling down and just, you know, for a few years there, it was just tumbling down the rabbit hole and trying to get my mind around what's going on. What's going on in this world? And what do I need to do? And what do I need to do for my family? Where do I need to go? I was crying out to God. I was seeking other believers. You know, most people just, of course, think you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. So this is 15 years ago or so. But my real concern just was for my five kids. Eventually I was having five kids. We have a sixth now, but I was like, well, what do I need? God, what do you want me to do? And I got more involved with church. I got more involved with local politics. And I went out to abortion protests. I went and volunteered to work at the prisons to help evangelize people in the prisons. You know, I was just like, what can we do to turn this country around? I didn't want to see the United States fall. I didn't want to see that patriotism was still, you know, it, some people say like you start wrapping yourself in the flag or wrapping the cross in the flag. You know, growing up in Texas, you just, it's almost like a religion to be, it's almost part of being a Christian is you're patriotic toward Texas and the United States. And so it's really hard to let go of that. I started doing all the regular prepper stuff, you know, more guns, more ammo, more food, more supplies, all that stuff to get ready for whatever was going to happen. But at some point I think I realized there wasn't going to be a political solution that, you know, the politicians weren't going to ever save us. About that same time as I started feeling this pressure from God on, it just felt like this weight on my chest. And that was like, you need to do something and you need to go somewhere. But I didn't know where. I just crying out to God, where do I go? What do I do? And I started in the physical. I just started researching what state, maybe Alaska's better. Maybe, you know, Montana, Idaho, you know, maybe there's somewhere we can keep our, you know, that God wants us to be. And I kind of, in my spirit kept feeling like, no, that's not where you need to go. And then I looked at all the English speaking countries, New Zealand, Australia, Belize, where do I go? And my spirit, I just never felt easy about any of those places. And I started looking at Latin American countries. And that's when I kind of felt like, okay, this is the kind of the direction you need to go. And I started looking into the country of Chile. And from my research, it seemed like Chile was the place to go. And it ticked all the boxes. There's no abortion. There wasn't any abortion. Confused marriage. There's no, it was still relatively Christian family oriented culture and the economy was good. All these things. I even had some distant relatives that were living there. I started contacting them, but then I saw what the political situation was in Chile. And, I could tell the person that ended up getting elected as the president wanted to move things in the same direction as the United States. And I was like, no, this isn't good. And so I was just confused. I didn't know where to go. And then I was listening to a podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with Rick Wiles with True News, but I was just listening to this pod. I like to listen from all different points of view and perspectives, and I don't agree with everybody on everything. But he had an interview with these people from Panama, and they were in the Highlands area of Panama. And I had already written off Panama as some mosquito infested swamp that with drug lords. And, you know, when you grow up in the 80s, you just think of, you know, what happened in Panama City and with, what's the name, the president guy, well, the United States went in and, took Noriega. Out, yeah, Noriega. So you just think of Noriega, drug lords, okay, Panama Canal, but it's probably hot and humid like Houston year round down there. And that's not what I was looking for. So I had kind of written off Panama before, but then these Christians that were doing this interview with Rick Wiles mentioned this Highlands area near Costa Rica. And it just like immediately, it just felt like this is the answer. This is where I need to go. And then I started researching Panama, and just started seeing this is an area that has a family culture, has economic stability, has social stability. They allow homeschooling, unlike some of the Latin American countries. The area where it's at, where these expats had moved to was nice spring like temperature year round, good soil, good rainfall. English was fairly widely spoken. It just seemed like, I just felt like God was saying, this is it. So my dad and I, we did an exploratory trip. We went and met with people that we had, some of the people that I saw on Rick Wiles' interview and some other Christians. And within a couple of weeks, I was led to this property, I felt, and said, this is, this property is where we need to go, and decided that right there to, okay, we're going to buy this property, sell everything in the United States and move here. And I felt God was saying, you need to move here, one, for your family, but two, to create this, what Jamie calls a faith haven, you know, a place of refuge, a place to go for, you know, I didn't audibly hear this, but I kind of like sensed in my mind, he was saying, you know, build a place where my people can come. Yeah. And I was like, okay. You know, so, like I said, went back to the United States, told my wife and kids, this is what we're doing. And before that, when I first mentioned going to Panama and I told my wife that, you know, I felt God was leading us there, she was not on board. She did not like that at all. She was close to her family. She had spent some time in Mexico as a missionary before we got married, and she wasn't ready to go into any kind of an environment like that again. And, but God worked it out. He made some circumstances come, and I think changed her mind without, you know, I didn't force it on her. I didn't, you know, it was God doing, you know, changing her mind about it. And, so, you know, that's basically the reason why we came. And that was, you know, seven years ago. And ever since then, we've been just working away here on the property. We've had people come here from all over the world, kind of seeking refuge. People from South Africa, Australia, Canada, Europe, Germany, Romania, Italy. Now, a lot of people will come here and they might only be here for 3 or 6 months. And then they decide, well, a different part of Panama would work better for them, but others have stayed. Yeah, I feel like I'm just here to build the infrastructure and help provide a place, and then that God will bring the right people at the right time. And it's not for everybody. Like you mentioned, some people I think are called to stay in the United States and fight the good fight there. Other people may be called to go to a different land and start their own community. And like you mentioned, it's some people, it's just their life circumstances, making an international move is just not in the cards or not something God has for them. You've got to have a solid marriage. We've seen people move here and they didn't have a good relationship with their marriage, and a move like that can just tear a marriage apart. The people that do best are people that they're either they were in the mission field, they've done a lot of international travel, not just going to Cancun or Paris, but, you know, have seen what the real world is. People in the ex-military, we have a lot of ex-military people here, because it can be a culture shock. It can be a major transition for people. And if you're not familiar, it's going to chew you up and spit you out, and you're going to be right back where you came from with less resources. So I think people really need to pray hard and figure out what God has for each person.
You had mentioned to me something that I thought was just amazing that I wish America would imply. And that was that the school system starts off with the principal praying, the teachers praying, all the kids are more or less must read the Bible front to back, and they're tested on it, I believe you said as well. I mean, that is amazing. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So we were here about 2 years. We had, in the United States, my wife was a public school teacher, and I designed schools before we back in the United States. So we started seeing what was going on with the, you know, at first it was multiculturalism, and they were kind of pushing Islam and some of that stuff in the schools, and keeping pushing Christianity out and not allowing any kind of talk of Christianity in the public schools in the United States. And then you start seeing it transition into the whole, you know, alphabet woke agenda stuff started infiltrating into the curriculum and into the teachers. And this is in Texas and in the public schools. And so we had decided we're not doing, even we thought we were going to stay in Texas. We were like, we're going to do homeschooling. We're not going to put our, you know, at least for us, that was the answer. So we came to Panama thinking, well, we're just going to keep doing homeschooling. We don't really know the situation with the public schools here. But we had been here a couple years, and our kids they weren't learning Spanish like we wanted them to. They would meet other Panamanians, and they'd start teaching the Panamanian kids English instead of our kids learning Spanish. So we're like, okay, we're just going to put you full immersion a year in public school here in Panama. And virtually no one speaks English in there, but they do have an English class. So we enrolled them in the school, and we were a little bit nervous about, oh, you know, these are going to be the only American kids in this school. And what's going to happen and whatever. But immediately that's when we found out that the principal prays every day, the public, the teachers pray, they pray for the individual students. The kids have to memorize the Bible. They read, they have a Bible class. So, and this stuff, people are like, oh, well, oh yeah, it's probably all Catholic in a Catholic country. Like, there was nothing Catholic. There was no, Mary or rosary or any of that stuff. There around here, there's a lot of Assemblies of God. There's a lot of Seventh-day Adventist, and non-denominational churches and things that have come here. And so they're not pushing any one denomination. And maybe that's different than other Central American countries. But we were just shocked. We were like, the stuff that they're doing in these public schools, you would get fired and probably criminal prosecution for teaching the Bible. And the other thing is the police have on their uniforms and on their cars Bible verses. There's Bible verses on the public buildings. Just last week, the school did a, this month is called, or this month is called the month of the Bible. And the school did a play, doing different parts of the Bible. And part of the audience was the mayor, the alcalde for this area. And the alcalde put up on his Facebook or whatever, oh, how wonderful these kids and the church and the school is here, and how they're witnessing the word of God. And this is from the government, the highest government official in this area. There was no, we never saw any woke agenda rainbow flags coming from these politicians or public school teachers. It was only Christians things. So yeah, we didn't even know that coming here, and we were just shocked at the amount of that, the Christian culture that was here. Not to say that everything's perfect and everyone is, but I, some people say it's like traveling back in time in the United States to the pre-1960s when they took the Bible and took prayer out of the public schools and all that. So yeah, we're still shocked about that, that because you just get so indoctrinated in the United States that, public school, public officials, you can't confirm the Bible and word of God and pray. And, yeah. So
how's the housing there? Because for one thing, we homeschool, we use Abeka. It's all Christian based. It's very good. We like it. We got five kids, and so, keeping them entertained can be interesting. But the moral values that we instill was why we refused to put them in schooling. And when I got out of the government, I thought, maybe I can go back to wanting to pursue being a history teacher. It could be a football coach, history teacher, the normal thing that guys like me end up doing. But I got the strongest urge not to do it. And then I talked to, fellows that I know that are teachers and who are telling me it's not worth it anymore. The kids don't want to hear it. The teachers are your fellow teachers, your own worst enemy. The superintendents are completely backwards in their thinking, which is, there's more good kids than bad kids. I'll say that. There's more good kids than bad kids. And there's more good people than bad people. I would like to say that. That might not be true anymore, but I would like to say that. But in the schools, it's reverse. You have more problems in schools than you do outside the school in the home. So I can see why people flee from schools and do what we're doing with homeschooling. But then to see the problem in the country, Ben, and how it is escalating. There's no de-escalation of problems in America. Like, prophecy is being fulfilled. It's cool. It's cool to watch. It's scary to think about when you insert kids into that problem. But to have a place like Panama, because when you told me you were in Panama, the first thing I thought of, Noriega. I was like, oh God, yeah. How's the cartels? First thing I thought of. But, when I was traveling in Peru, man, I could tell you there's some places along the Andes Mountains I'd sell my place right now and go and live. And I know expats that were Americans that live in Peru and won't come back. I mean, it is a culture shock. I know, very, very little Spanish. I knew what I knew from working on the border, which is probably not the best Spanish to use. That's a culture shock. But the other shock would be, how cheap is the property? Like in my area, I live in DFW area, the Dallas-Fort Worth area. When I bought this property, 5 acres, 1,200 square foot house, 3 bed, 2 bath, $256,000. That was 5-6 years ago. Yeah. Now it's close to $400,000, but you have this little thing called the housing bubble. that is growing closer and closer to the needle that's always wanting to poke it. And when that goes, man, people are going to lose their minds. So tell me about the housing. If people wanted to move to Panama, what could they expect to be looking at? Ranch style houses, multiple story houses? What's the property like? Is it heavily vegetated? Like, what would they be needing to walk into prepared with?
Okay. So it depends on, you know, what do they say in the real estate market? Location, 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 right? And that really affects the price here just as much or more than anywhere else. So if you're close to the town center, then a residential building lot in town is around $50,000. And that's a fifth of an acre or so, you know, a little town lot. And, if you want to build a house, if you want to be the general contractor and oversee all the construction, you're looking at a cost of about $50 or $60 a square foot to build. If you want to pay someone else to be the general contractor, suddenly that price doubles to $100 to $120 a square foot for construction. And that's to build something similar to what you would be used to in the United States. Now, here most people build with just concrete block, concrete floors, all steel structure for the roof, and then a metal or tile roof. And all the floors inside the house are tiled. And a lot of that is just for durability because of the moisture. No one tries to do wall to wall carpet or anything like that. So to me, the quality of the house to me, it is superior to the United States as far as durability, maintenance and some of these things compared to 2x4s and sheetrock. And the other thing here in the higher elevations, you don't need air conditioning or heating. So you may have a ceiling fan or some fans in your house just to keep the air circulating. And some people use dehumidifiers if it's too humid, but the temperature here stays in the 70s year round. So there's never, that's during the day. At night, it can drop down into the 50s or 60s. So you're eliminating, for as far as cost of living, the people in the houses around here, they're looking at usually $30 to $50 a month electricity bills year round. Right now, the internet, I'm using Starlink. I figure Elon and those guys are probably using that for some nefarious purposes in the end. But right now, it's the best. There's other options, but we're paying $52 a month for Starlink here. That just started now 5 months ago or something. Before that, we had a dish service. There's also fiber optic, but internet can be anywhere to up to $100 or $120 a month, down to $20 or $30 a month, just depending on where you're at and what service. There's different service available in different locations. So that's if you're living in town or close to town. Now, if you want to live out on 5 acres like you're doing, and the prices are going to be a lot less for that same $50,000 for a fifth of an acre, maybe you can get the 5 acres, but you're going to be outside of town. You may be on a dirt road. You may not have, you probably need to end up drilling your own. You'll probably most likely have to drill your own well, and electrical service may take a long time to get, which to me isn't necessarily a problem if you're looking to go off grid and you want to be, put in solar panels or some kind of alternative energy system. And to me, it's a lot more doable here because you're not having to run these big air conditioning units. The amount of electricity you need is significantly less than, say, Texas or Arizona or Florida or North Dakota. You know, you're just not having to deal with those temperature extremes. mostly you're running electricity to run your LED lights in your house, your refrigerator, and your technology, you know. So you're not having this big electrical load. So I think off grid, you know, we're connected to the grid here, but we also have a solar panel system as backup. So again, the cost of construction out on that 5-acre property is still going to be $50-$60 a square foot if you're kind of guiding these crews to do it. And if you want someone else to do it, you know, some other contractor to do it, you're looking at $100-$120 a square foot. But like I said, to me, the construction is more substantial and more durable, but that can still be an adjustment for people and a culture shock. We've had people move here from Canada and the United States, and they don't like that you have a concrete wall. They want to be able to put a picture on the wall and just put a little tack in the wall to hang a picture. Well, you can't just put a tack in the wall on a concrete wall. you got to get your drill out and masonry bit and drill a hole in the wall. People want wall to wall carpet. They all are so cold and without having having all tile floor. Well, you know, put some rugs down. But so even little things like that are an adjustment for people. People get used to having their Starbucks coffee every day or going to Cheesecake Factory every Friday. And there's things like that people take for granted, and they come here and suddenly that's the biggest thing in the world is they can't get their coffee from a place they probably shouldn't be getting coffee from in the first place. They don't have all those modern conveniences. You don't have Amazon next day delivery. I can get stuff from Amazon, but it takes 10 days to get stuff here. It's got to get forwarded through Florida, and it costs $2 to $3 a pound to get it here. So that's just there's a trade-off. If you're used to eating American products that at the grocery store, if you want Frito-Lay chips, if you want Kraft macaroni and cheese and all that kind of thing, you're going to pay a little bit more for it here because they're bringing that's imported stuff. But if you're used to all that American diet, which to me is not good for you. I just spent 5 weeks in the United States, and it's almost impossible to find stuff that's not prepackaged or that's GMO or processed.
Do you not have all that type of stuff in Panama?
We have some of that, but it's not to the extent. And here it's a lot easier to we buy organic vegetables, and we have some Mennonites that live on our property. They're growing 100% organic right up. I can throw a rock to their garden from here. But there's other people growing organic here. It's cheaper and a lot easier to get, and you can grow your own. We have chickens. We have our own cow. We drink our own raw milk. We give our kids every day raw milk, eggs from our chickens, and we have gardens. We're growing all kinds of fruits and vegetables here. And to try to do that I tried to do that in Texas before I came here. And you know the temperature extremes. Yeah, I was in Texas for 5 weeks, and it got up to 113, I think. And it was over 100 basically every day for the whole time we were there. The only time it cooled down is when we were at Jamie's place up in Colorado, and it was still like 91 at 7,000 feet elevation. It's still going to fry you up there. But so trying to grow your own fruits and vegetables, trying to grow stuff in the Texas soil. Most of the Texas soil is junk. Here you have the volcanic soil. You have good rainfall. You have springs, natural springs. In a grid down scenario, you know, or you're talking like you talked about 1 second after, these people are used to that situation. I mean, a lot of these people still aren't even hooked up to electricity, or they're growing their, you'll see these animals, cows and sheep and stuff, just tied up in their front yard. People, it wouldn't be a big deal if the lights went out.
They're still riding horses into town?
Oh, yeah, there is. There's still people riding horses in the town. There, this weekend is a flower festival. There's going to be a big horse parade. I tell people I've seen more real cowboys in Panama than in Texas.
Yep.
They're still riding horses and roping people. They said and roping cows. They said 20 years ago there were more horses than cars in town when you go into town. So there's still a generation. I mean, if they said, okay, everything's got to go back the way it was, I think a lot of them would be like, oh, good, fine. You know, and people have horses tied, even in town, they'll have horses tied up in their yard on a quarter acre or something. So they're not that far away from 1800s living.
Let me ask you a question, Ben. I grew up with that lifestyle, and I'll be honest with you, I hated it. I hated it as a kid. That's a lot of work. But I'm going back to that lifestyle, the lifestyle I hated, because I see the merit in it. But it is so much harder for me to go back to the old ways. You're living in a place where the old ways are what thrives and technology doesn't. And that's very interesting. Yeah, Texas soil sucks. My poor fruit trees are, man, I'm afraid to even plant them into the ground because the ground, the nutrients so depleted. So, you know, we keep them these big, big, huge above ground boxes, but it's not sufficient. You know, that's why God has called my wife and I a few years ago, told us, you know, you're probably moving to northern Arkansas, to the Ozarks. And strangely enough, I go to the Ozarks quite a bit now with our paleo research group. And I believe, because God spoke to our family years ago, that we were going to create a place for God's people to go to. It's funny how men and women are being told this. That's prophecy, I think, being fulfilled, revealed, and people need to take that and they need to really chew on that for a while because bad times are coming. You sitting in Panama, if we, let's say World War III breaks out, which it probably will pretty soon, and we get hit with the big EMP or the big cyber attack and we go dark, how does that affect you in Panama?
I'm sure it's going to cause chaos and confusion for people in general, but we're about 7 hours away from Panama City and 7 hours away from San Jose, Costa Rica. We're near the Costa Rican border. I don't think it would affect us very much. This area is also considered the breadbasket of Panama. There's a valley right next to the volcano that I can see from our house that 80% of all the vegetables in the whole country are grown in that little valley. We also have the dairy production and all the cows and things here. Even if it went dark in Panama City, the biggest threat would be those people trying to find their way here. But that's 7 hours by car with good traffic. you're trying to make that trip on foot, you're not going to get very far. I think people in Central America and Latin America, they're fairly equipped for that kind of, a lot better equipped for that scenario than people in North America or Europe, where
the temperature is a lot better.
Yeah, so I'm not going to say it's not going to affect, you know, it's going to be chaos and confusion all over the world. You know, the currency here is more stable because we're linked to the dollar. Now so it makes it easy to buy things, and that offers a lot of the stability that Panama has, is because the Balboa is totally interchangeable with the dollar. You can hand someone a $20 bill, or you can hand them 20 Balboa coins. And it's the same thing to them. So Panama prints its own coins, but then also everyone just uses American dollars. So, you know, an American dollar collapse, that, you know, I think Panama would have to consider, may consider detaching from the dollar and attaching to, you know, one of the BRICS currency or whatever, or the, whatever the new world currency ends up being. But that's why we're trying to set up here alternative currency systems or barter groups, barter systems.
Chicken eggs, man. Chicken eggs. That's your currency of the future.
Yeah. How much milk, how many eggs we trade, you know, a loaf of bread that we make for a dozen eggs or, you know, yeah.
You know, it's funny, the Lycurgus, the guy who created the Lacedaemonian country, where the best well-known city is called Sparta, he outlawed money. And if you wanted money, more or less, money was a 25-pound plate, like what you work out with. That was money. So if you valued money, you had to carry around this 25-pound plate. And very quickly, people stopped valuing money and they valued ethics more. Ethics, trade. Now, once again, Sparta is not exactly the cream of the crop of how you would want to live. It was very much a slave state. But there are ways to get around the mammon, around money. You know, when we were at Jamie Walden's conference, I talked about becoming an asset for your community, for your family, and setting up a community that was ready for these types of events. And, you know, in your area, it would be much easier to set up something like that. Mainly, and I'll give you a few reasons why as I chew on this. For one thing, you're around a bunch of like-minded people. Already, you are above the stratosphere that is America in preparation. You have to be around like-minded people. People not only who are believers in Christ, but people who can also pull their own weight. As Teddy Roosevelt said about any American citizen, the one thing that should be asked of him is that they pull their own weight. You know, if you can grow your own food, your house is sustainable. That's a beautiful thing. I lived in houses like that before. I actually liked them a lot. I think that's already an advantage that most Americans don't have. And you're not around the chaos that is America right now. The average city in America is chaotic. It's filled with the homeless. I would imagine that in your area, people are taken care of. But you also have the rising spree of crimes. Criminality is through the roof in America. We're easily the most dangerous country in the world. The most, quote, freest and most dangerous country in the world. The thing that I always said was the only advantage that we really had here in America is that we had our guns. Now, they can't just come and take our guns from us. People are going to willfully give up their guns. Because I don't know one cop, now I'm sure there's plenty of idiots out there, but I don't know of one cop that would go door to door to collect guns and make it very far or even have the cojones to go and do it. I wouldn't, because at least in our part of Texas, you're going to get blown off the front porch. But do you have worries like that in Panama? I know you guys can carry guns. I know you told me you got a little arsenal's worth. I mean, can you let people know that? Because that's one thing people don't understand. You can go to other countries and actually still own firearms.
Yeah. Yeah. The Panama doesn't have like the Second Amendment and it seemingly not as strong gun rights, but it took about a year for me to get to get my first gun and get the conceal and you get the gun permit plus the concealed carry permit. And it's good for, the gun permit's good for 10 years, concealed carries for 5 years. And, so I bought a Smith & Wesson 9mm pistol. And, then I got another Smith & Wesson 9mm. So I ended up getting two of those. You know, in prepper circles, you know, they say one is none is two is one kind of. So, hey, you need, if you're going to get one, might as well get two. Now, the prices on the guns are about double what they're going to cost in the United States. But once you get your first one, it's relatively, you know, it takes about 3 months to get the next one. And the hold up on each one. So you go and purchase the weapon, and then you send it down to Panama City, and they actually do a ballistics test on it. So they want to have an inventory of the ballistics on every weapon that's out there. So if there's a crime involved, they can see what weapon fired the bullet or whatever. But once you're in the system, which, you know, there's positive and negatives of being in the system. It's just like in the United States. I figured anything you bought on the books, just figure one day you're going to have to turn that in, or you'll be motivated to do so. And then there's weapons that could be off the books. If people want to go that route, you know, and there's possible legal ramifications for that. But I decided to do everything above board here, and I now have 4 handguns, and I may get another one for my wife to use. The other thing is for 2 of the guns, I use the they're called MCK. I think I can mention it to you. They're
Micro Ronies.
Yeah, CAA Macaroon. I think they're out of Florida. I think they might originally be out of Israel, but yes. It's where you can put that. It basically is a pistol to carbine conversion. So you can put a red dot sight, or you can add flashlight or whatever, and you're getting multiple points of contact. So you may be able to shoot out to 50 yards instead of 25, or with more accuracy. And it's a foldable stock. And they don't have restrictions here on short barrel rifles. They don't have restrictions here on short barrel shotgun. You can cut off a shotgun. They don't care. They don't care about foldable stocks. They don't have all those little nitpicky stuff that the United States tries to use, to limit what you can have. You can buy just about anything here. It's just, it's going to cost more, and it may take a little time to get it. Especially like one of the things that took me a year to get the first 9mm is it had to get shipped in from the United States, the Smith & Wesson. There's a lot more limited supply. You know, the country has 3.5 million people, and not very many of those people have guns. There's a lot less people that are equipped with guns here. You have to be more, you have to have more resources. You know, most people aren't going to use their resources on buying guns here, because there's not the gun violence. There's not there's not the criminal drug situation here. Drugs, I know that's a concern for some people, is like kidnappings and drug lords, and that stuff doesn't go on here. That happens in Colombia. It happens in Mexico. It happens in El Salvador and some of these other Latin American countries.
But in America.
As far as here, Panama is more of a pass-through country. And most of the drugs and stuff coming from Colombia, they build these little submarines, and they tow it behind a ship, and they just go coastal around it. Or they do it undercover on the roads. But it's not – there's not like this visible drug lord control of regions of the country like you have in Mexico and Colombia. I haven't heard of any kidnappings. I haven't heard of any murders that are like drug related stuff. I'm not to say that stuff can't come in the future. You know, if things get chaotic and these type of groups can step in and provide law and order. But as far as right now, we feel very safe here. Our children are out running around playing. We're never afraid of them being kidnapped or anything. We weren't afraid of them being in the public schools once we got them in there. And you'll see little small children walking on the side of the road all day at night, women by themselves. Nobody even is concerned about it. You'll also see little kids walking around with machetes, 6-year-old carrying a machete. Everyone carries machetes around here, and no one even thinks anything about it. So as far as crime and gun violence, we haven't seen that. I think you can easily be here. You can be better equipped, better trained than the local police, the border police. Someone like yourself would be the elite of the elite. You would be the ex-military and police people in the United States are so more highly trained than the police and there's just no military in Panama and there's no military in Costa Rica. So we don't have, after the Noriega days, they eliminated the military. So now we have a national police and a local police and a border patrol. But those people aren't very well equipped. And it's easy for an American to come down here and be more equipped and more trained than even the local law enforcement, for whatever that, you know, whatever situation that comes up. That's the situation here.
So before we leave, then give us some pros and cons, reasons why people should consider Panama if they're considering leaving the U.S. and some cons for coming to Panama.
Okay. So to me, the number one of the highest things, I was just trying to follow what God's leading is and where he wanted me to go. But along with that was what is best for my family and my future, my children, my potential grandchildren. Look, I don't know if Jesus is coming back in next year or 3 years from now or 10 years from now or 1,000 years from now. Things look pretty dire. Things look like everything's coming down, right? But God could set the reset and say, okay, now, you know, foil all the enemy's plans and say, there's another 1,000 years on this thing. You know, I don't know. You know, everyone has a different eschatology. But to me is what's the best, one of the primary reasons for moving here is providing a place for children, grandchildren, great grandchildren, a future. Some, you know, people that we were moving, when we said we were moving here, they thought we were crazy. Some people just totally rejected us and felt like we were judging them by moving away from Texas. Most of our family wasn't on board. Most of our friends weren't on board with us coming here. So that's a con. That's something you're going to have to deal with on, are you willing to give up family and friends that may not agree with your decision? But I try to tell those people, hey, look, from my vantage point, I don't see what I'm doing any different than what my forefathers did when they left Germany or England or Europe. They were seeking more freedom. They were seeking a better future for their family. They were seeking future prosperity and opportunity. And that's what we see here. We see more freedom, even maybe on the books, you look at the Constitution and all that of the United States and you think, oh, that this is going to be the most free. But in actuality, in the United States, the government is in your business all over the place. I just feel like it kept amping up more and more and more. There would be, you know, more restrictions, more regulations, more Big Brother, more cameras all over the place, more you can't do this, you can't do that. So to me, there's more freedom here. I can build stuff. I can sell stuff. I can do stuff here that would be totally illegal or take a lot of red tape and permits in the United States. So that, to me, that's a positive. Yeah, there's more freedom. There's a lower population here. If things get really crazy, you want to be away from the big population centers. All of Panama is like 3.5 million people or something. I'm not sure what the latest census is. And the majority of that is in Panama City, 7 hours away from here. There's just a lot of land for a few amount of people compared to some other countries. Now in the United States, yeah, you can get away. You know, I was driving through New Mexico last month. I mean, you can get away from people, but can you grow food? Can you live? That's another thing. So another positive here is, like I mentioned, the soils, the weather, the amount of rainfall, the I don't have to worry about being froze to death here. I don't have to worry about 110 degrees burning up all my crops. I don't have to worry about a drought. Even in drought conditions, there is a dry season. It can go 4 months without raining. But there's enough groundwater. And we have here we have a little creek that runs through, and it has water running through it year round. Even if it doesn't rain for 4 or 5 months, it'll still have water running in it. So the natural resources here, the opportunities, we really want to promote entrepreneurship and people starting small businesses. And when people come here, it's like stepping back into the past. You're like a time traveler in some ways. You come here and, well, there's no drive-through fast food place. Well, there's no cheesecake factory. There's none of these things that the United States has developed over the last 50, 80 years. I feel like people can move here and they can be the first. They can be the first Starbucks, and it can be Christian instead of instead of evil. It can be good, you know, a good coffee place. The coffee here is considered some of the best in the world that grows right around here. That's some of the land costs are expensive in some of the areas because of the coffee is grown here. Some of the coffee here is sold for $1,000 to $2,000 a pound in Japan and in Europe. So it's a geisha coffee and it wins all these competitions. They don't even sell the Panamanian coffee in the United States because they don't have enough of it. They're selling it to Japan and Germany. So to me, there's just a lot of opportunity here, especially for Americans or Europeans, Canadians, people that have kind of seen the future. You can come here and make the future here. It in a scenario where that's possible, you know, who knows what the future holds. The other positive is, like we mentioned, is the Christian culture, the more family culture. Everyone's not just trying to keep up with the Joneses. They don't have work. Isn't like the number one priority in their life, which can be a negative too. You know, in the United States, you're used to things getting done fast. You're used to professional people. Well, one of the drawbacks here is people say this mañana attitude, tomorrow. I say, okay, well, we'll do that tomorrow. Well, what tomorrow really means is someday in the future, I hope to come over and do that. It doesn't mean in the next 24 to 48 hours, they're going to come and fix your leaky pipe. That means someday they might come show up, fix your leaky pipe. And that's why it's important to build a community of people you can trust and rely upon. But there is a lot of things here that's a positive and a negative. Is you just have to do stuff yourself. You have to rely on yourself. You have to be more sufficient, self-sufficient here, or rely on your own community of other expats or Panamanians that you get to know. You can't be as reliant on we had a guy that started a fire here in the dry season. It started burning up our forest area. I went down. We called the fire department. I drove down to the fire department. There was nobody there. We could not contact the fire department. So we had to put that fire out ourselves. Our communities had to we'd get all buckets, get fire, water hoses, shovels, whatever. We had to be the fire department. You have to be your own security. You have to be your own everything. So some people aren't going to like that. They like the safety net of being in a Western country where they feel like, well, the government or somebody can take care of that. Look, when someone dies, you don't just call someone to come take care of that. If someone dies in your house or even at a hospital or whatever, you have to take care of all that. You have to get the person buried within 24 hours. You have to figure out all these things. There's just a lot of things that people take for granted in Western countries, and these services and companies, which to me is an opportunity. You can provide those services and that they don't have here. So there is a negative is for a lot of people is the culture change. There's positive and negatives to the culture and learning a new language. Some people just aren't cut out for that you know, when you get older, it gets hard to learn new languages. I've been working on Spanish the last 8 years, and it's still difficult. I'm not fluent. I can get stuff done. I can buy stuff, but to have a deep conversation, you know, I'm going to have to use Google Translate for every sentence. But technology is making that transition easier. Moving to a foreign country is easier now than it's ever been. You know, when my forefathers came from Germany in the 1800s on a sailboat, they never saw their family ever again. Well, I can just have a Zoom call and see my family again. When my forefathers came from Germany to the United States, they didn't speak English. They only knew German, but within a few generations, they were bilingual, or within a generation. So there's a lot of starting over, and you have to kind of be a pioneer. And some people are ready for that. Some people are built for that, and other people aren't.
I think there's a lot of people who are looking for that ability to start over, a fresh slate, get back to a more simplified life that revolves more around Christ than it does around the Chrysler. You know, I think people really, because if I had the income, I'd go buy a rental property there. You know, I see it because I say it like this. There is a merit for understanding the way the world is and having access out of the future concentration camp that is the once United States. That's where we're going. And if you don't think that's not where we're going, that's what the president wants. That's what his administration is pushing. I never thought, Ben, 5 years ago, I never thought I'd see Trump indicted four times to the point that he may actually do prison time. I never thought we would look like Venezuela right now or Cuba. I never thought it. I really didn't. I know a lot of people saw it coming. I saw it coming, but no one really expected it. And, you know, it's only getting worse. Certain things we can't say on YouTube. So we say, you know, the lockdowns are coming back and the things that come with the lockdowns. It's mass chaos is coming. And I tell people all the time, point out on a map in America where safe is. You may be able to hide from people. You can't hide from the government. And eventually you will have to commingle with the government. If you want your lights on, your water, you want to go get your food, you want your gas, your diesel, your electric, your medical. I mean, in a country like ours now, Hillary Clinton was right. The government got too big to fail. This is not 1776. You're not going to have a revolutionary war and win this country back. We are beyond that. And that's a really hard thing. It's hard. It was hard for me to accept that because I was definitely one of those rah, rah. Well, 1776 again, we'll win the country back. Like, you know, crap Alex Jones always says to people. And he's right. And I appreciate the effort, but there's a reality pill that you need to swallow. And the reality is for some people, leaving the nation is actually a better option. I know for me, you mentioned this. I know for me, I'm staying. I'm staying, and there's a reason why I'm staying. You left because there's a reason why you left, and that reason is God. So if you don't have God in the center of your life and you just want to move somewhere, it may work out. It may not work out. But, you know, I think you did the right thing by always involving God first. And, you know, for anyone listening, we'll ask Ben, you know, how they can get a hold of you. And I know you also have a YouTube channel to be able to keep up with you. But, you know, if you're not involving God and how you're prepping, how you're training yourself and your kids, how you are exposing your family to this world, if you're not involving God, man, you're taking a risk. You're taking a big risk. And, you know, Satan has everything in this world to offer you to watch you stumble. Everything. And I've grown to the point, Ben, where You know, if I could shut this whole thing down, this whole thing, no more podcasting. You know, I don't want my face on the internet as it is. I want to be a no one, a nothing. I want to be in my cabin on the side of a mountain, watch my kids play at the horses, and that's it. That, you know, Doug Story's end of the book, right there, end of the book. But that's not the way God wants it. That's not the way God will have it. So we have to deal with that as well. So, you know, you give us a very good option. I know I've had friends talk to me about going to Peru, Canada, in the like upper frontier portion of, where is it? Northwest of Alberta, like way up in the Yukon. I mean, yeah, that's great, but you are literally going to freeze to death, like literally. So, you know, in Texas right now, it got up to 118 the other day. And this sucks here. This is the worst drought we've ever been in. And we haven't had a fire, like a really bad fire season yet. So that's going to happen. But, you know, it sounds like where you're at, man, you're in a good little honey hole. And, you know, I'll be praying for you guys while you're out there. Pray for your success. Anyone who's listening, pray for the success of your brothers and sisters that are no longer in the United States. You never know. You may wind up there. So, Ben, can you let them know if they want to get in contact with you, how they can, and also about y'all's YouTube channel?
Yeah, so the number one way is just it's CorazonDelCielo.com. That's the name of our neighborhood, our community here. It means the heart of heaven. I didn't come up with that name. The previous owner of the property came up with that, and we just kept that as the name. And so Corazon Del Cielo, CorazonDelCielo.com. And then on the same thing on our YouTube channel is just YouTube, and then you just type in Corazon Del Cielo, and we'll have our channel there. So you can hook up with a newsletter. You can send us an email. If anyone wants more information, want to have a Zoom call, we do Zoom calls with people all the time just to let them know, answer any questions, any doubts, see if it's a good fit. It's not going to be a good fit for everybody, but yeah. And they have specific questions for us. We're happy to help them. So yeah, just contact us. And a couple other last things is maybe God's calling you to, or to me, there is some wisdom in having a plan B. You know, have your passport ready, or, you know, have an up-to-date passport, or have a place to go. And more, maybe it's not for you. Maybe there's a family member or friend that God's on their heart looking for somewhere. You know, I think there's some wisdom in that. Yeah, we're here to answer any questions. If things go down like some people suspect, you know, World War III, grid down, whatever, if you feel at that point God wants you to be here, look, just make your way down here. We'll take care of you. You know, we have I kind of, for my vision is we have a,
Ben, you're breaking up on your signal there.
And we'll be there to help anyone out. Just say, oh, yeah, I heard about this place in Panama. Just get, you know, get on a, jump a boat, cross the river, whatever it takes, find a way. And yeah.
Well, man, I really appreciate you coming on and, you know, telling us your story. I hope to have you more on and, you know, see how you're progressing. You know, with your community, and, you know, I would love to see some pictures and videos of the community and, you know, any activities you guys are doing as an inspiration, because there are communities here in America, I think that could truly be inspired and motivated by the stuff that you guys are doing out there, man. You know, it's awesome to see God's people out there doing the Lord's work and being successful and motivated and excited and positive. I'm so sick of people trying to scare people into buying books and crap. It's good to hear the people of God enjoying their life. You know, it's so motivating to be able to listen to you, you know, actually enjoy where you're at. Because here, you know, in America, everybody's scared to death of everything. And it's a super big buzzkill. And so, you know, hey, if you want to enjoy your life, maybe you might want to consider being out there with Ben's area in Panama. So we'll leave a link in the description below. I'll get with you that way I can have the correct spelling because my Spanglish is not good. So yeah. We'll leave the correct link in there in the description. Ben, hey, brother, man, you guys stay safe out there. You know, God be with you guys and the work you're doing. And we'll check in with you. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. And like I said, we'll have the link to their YouTube channel and to their website. And other than that, thanks, guys, for watching. Stay frosty. We'll see you next time. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.